everyone. Welcome to the World Bank EdTech Podcast. Today, we're speaking about the implementation of EdTech in Korea. Korea has a world-class national digital education agency that oversees the implementation of EdTech in Korea. It's called Korea Education and Research Information Services, or KERIS. KERIS was developed to introduce innovative practices within the Korean education system, such as the Cyber Home Learning System. Today, we're speaking with three members of the Global EdTech section of KERIS.
Welcome to the World Bank EdTech Podcast. It's a conversation on the use of technology and innovation in education globally. My name is Changha Lee. I'm an EdTech analyst and part of the World Bank EdTech team. Today, from the KERIS Global EdTech section, we're speaking with Chief Sangwon Kim and two researchers, Mr. Min Kim and Ms. Chisun Yu. Welcome to the program, and thank you for joining us. Why don't you introduce yourself and your team?
Thank you, Changha. We are delighted to join the World Bank EdTech Podcast. My name is Sangwon Kim. I'm the Chief of the Global EdTech section in KERIS. Today, I am accompanied with my colleagues, Mr. Min Kim and Ms. Chisun Yu.
My name is Min Kim. I work as a research fellow at the Global EdTech section in KERIS.
My name is Jisun Yu, working as a senior program specialist in the KERIS.
Global EdTech section aims to vitalize the use of education technology, including software and hardware used in schools, and also make such efforts in the global society as well. The biggest task of my team is to operate the EdTech testbed called EdTech Subtrap in three regions of Korea. EdTech Subtrap is a hub connecting education field with EdTech companies that enables teachers and suppliers to communicate and cooperate while discovering, developing, and spreading EdTech product that is most needed at school.
For those listeners who are not familiar also about National Digital Education Agency, can you walk us through also a bit on the basics of KERIS? Last winter, I visited KERIS and there was two humongous buildings. And I think Jisun walked me through. I think it would be really fun to talk a little bit more about your institution.
Yeah, KERIS stands for Korea Education Research and Information Service. It's something that in Korea, we have several quasi government offices in education. Maybe in K-12 basic education, we have Korea Education Development Institution. So that's called KEDI. And also we have for the assessment, Korea Institution.
That's called KAIS. That's for curriculum and evaluation. And QIVET for the vocational training and so on. And KERIS is only one part of the many quasi-governmental organizations.
So we are specializing in ICT use in education. We were established in 1999. Before we became a KERIS, in KEDI, and we had multimedia centers and other centers, and then they were put together to become a KERIS. So in our organization right now, more than 300 employees are working, and the main services are around four or five. The first of which is that the National Education Information System. In Korea, we call it NICE, but some people call it NACE. Now, anyway, it's the biggest in the world EMIS system. It has more than 200 plus functions in that system. And another one is what we call EduNet. That's e-learning, which can be used by teachers, students, and parents. And also that nowadays, that includes the digital books. And another one is Research Information Sharing Service. We call it RISS. This one is for higher education. In this service, students, faculty members, professors, administrators, when they need to find some kind of journals, dissertations, all those data, they can actually find in RISS.
Kind of like a Google Scholar.
Yes, Google Scholar is the same version which was learned by the KERIS in Korea. And most of the papers are actually for free. And another one is the school information security, because we have to actually protect our students and parents' personal information. And those things are the functions actually we carry out. And of course, there is one of the most important mission we are doing. That's a global EdTech section.
CARIS promotes various projects and research related ICT in K-12 to support teachers' work and support education officers' work and to provide valuable education information to the public.
So there's like a variety of profile, I'm assuming, that works at CARIS. So some people are more tech-oriented and some people have more education background. That's a mix that you see a lot in terms of experts.
Our personnel in CARIS consists of people, four majors.
First one, engineering. We have a lot of servers and we have lots of technical staff in the CARIS. So the engineering major. That is the first. The second one is actually educational technology. Because educational technology, they will learn about education and they will learn about technology and then they will combine these things together. So the EdNet service in those parts, we have lots of educational technology. And the third major is those who majored in the library and information science, they will be a main actor in RISS service. Management and that audit team, all those people are all mixed together. So we have in the policy making department.
And I think it's one of the merits to have a external agency as CARIS, because we can develop our experience and expertise over the time while the officers working in the Ministry of Education are more generalists who have talents in many different majors.
In your opinion, what would be the pros and cons of having a quasi-governmental organization?
Having the specialized organization is somehow, it's the basic reason why we were founded. Because the process, the Ministry of Education, the officials, they are not experts in this field. So our organization is packed with all the experts in different areas. So that's one of the pros. It is easier in our organization to develop our expertise more because we have certain specialties in certain regions. And we can be more flexible than the Ministry of Education. The cons, of course, is we are not the government office. So we are trying to provide lots of basics to the Ministry of Education. We are quasi-government office. We have to depend on our budget to the Ministry of Education. So depending on what kind of government is, we are being affected somehow, a little bit. So I think it's one of the cons. And also our organization, the CARIS, cannot make profits in our projects by law. That's also one of the limitations to our organizations. If we can make some kind of profits in our operations, there are lots of services. Actually, we can make lots of in Korea, but we have to provide all our services for free since we are receiving our salaries from the taxpayers' money.
The new Minister of Education, who is a former economist, but at the same time, he's heavily EdTech oriented, right? He's almost like an EdTech guru in Korean society. And I think I read from the media that there's new digital education initiative being introduced in 2 years, 3 years, right? And it's like powered by AI and there's going to be digital textbook and it's going to offer personalized learning. Can you introduce us a little bit more how classroom in Korea is changing or is about to change?
Yes. Korean Minister of Education recently declared new education vision in February. Minister of Education Ju Ho-ri proposed providing education enabling all teachers to use EdTech as a new vision for education in the era of digital transformation.
Our minister has a really strong willingness to promote EdTech in Korea's educational settings. He has about three, four more years, so many things will be changed because in Korea, historically, our policies were top-down. Our teachers and students will be really front-runners of using the educational technologies in the near future.
I'm sure that you're very much aware of the growing demand on these agencies, particularly after COVID. I think it was 2 months ago that we were in a call all together with Vietnam, who wants to replicate basically the EdTech policies. And I think potentially they want to establish something very similar in their country. So I know you have 30 years of experience and 6 different master plans, but if you could briefly maybe walk us through major critical steps for other countries to open their own national digital education agency, what would be those steps, the main critical milestones?
That's really very difficult. The first thing, first of which was actually we made a law. We were mandated by law, act. We have a Korea Education Research Information Service Law, which gave the legal foundations of our organizations. Then it has to be the Ministry of Education had to have some kind of a strong will to actually push through this kind of organization. And in Korea, we have a very strong national curriculum. So based on national curriculum, actually, our K-12 teachers teach in their everyday lessons. So because of that, establishing the organizations like CARIS was quite understandable and acceptable by the stakeholders in education. The teachers, the students, and the parents, they did not actually object to make our organization. So those are the two things. And third one, I think you need to actually secure the appropriate personnel to run this kind of organization. But in our case, before we were actually founded, there are two huge centers in another organization. So it was quite easier. But in other countries, in their case, if they do not have those kind of experts, it will be quite difficult. So they had to try to secure the appropriate experts in this ICT use in education and also the edtech areas.
So our podcast listeners are from all around the world. For those listeners who are less familiar with our country, Korea, it would be really great to sketch out key aspects of the edtech policies in Korea. Like, what are the edtech incorporated in everyday like teaching and learning? What kind of like devices and learning contents are used in schools? How are teachers trained? Any key ideas in Korea that you would like to introduce to our listeners?
Korea has established a master plan for ICT use in education in every 5 years. So the use of edtech developed along with the master plans. And as the audience may well know, Korea had very little resource to rebuild the country after the Korean War. And thus we thought the education and quality human resource was the key to get back on the track again. And a large amount of investment were made into the education, and it was mainly done by the big single government. And education still is a very important in Korean society now. And the use of edtech in classrooms started with using TVs and video contents in the classrooms. And for now, currently, even the elementary school students, they code their robots themselves. And they solve problems with the robot. And especially after the pandemic, the ability to use non-facial lecture platforms has greatly increased among the teachers, students, and even parents. And to talk about the master plans briefly, and in the first master plan stage, we focused on the distribution of the infrastructures. So every school's in Korea, we're given at least one computer room and TV for every classroom. And also, CARIS was established in this first stage of the master plan. And in the second stage of the master plan, we aimed to train 33% of teachers every year so they can use some kind of ICT in their lectures. So after 3 years, every teacher in Korea were at least trained for at least once. And now we are establishing a new master plan. Last year, our new minister came into the Ministry of Education, and we are very much focused on the digital education innovation. And we are also researching how to utilize the digital textbook with the technology of AI and also new cutting-edge technologies.
Wait, let's move back to the first master plan. So when was that established and what was the reason behind basically installing computer lab equipping per school and not per student or per teacher? Do you happen to know the government's decision-making behind that? Because that's an interesting approach.
The first master plan was established in 1998. The reason of the distribution of computer labs and TVs are, I think most countries share the same ideas because the technology is evolving and we need the students to get used to the new technologies and also increase the effectiveness of the lessons.
The ratio per student, per teacher, how has it been? I'm asking because during COVID, there was a school shutdown, so everybody stayed at home, right? So if computers are all at school, they don't have access. So was there any device policy and devices distribution?
The students with low-income families, they actually did not have devices to study at home. So the Ministry of Education actually had a policy. The city government offices and other the corporations, we had to donate our laptops and tablets to those kids. Sure, let's say in our case, if we buy a notebook in our organization, actually we have to use about 5 years, then we can actually buy new ones. But those tablets, after 5 years, before we actually refurbish or we sell them out, we donated those kind of books and tablets. And also some the personnel have two books, so we had to donate those things. So that the number of the notebook donated during the pandemic era is more than 1 million tablets, I guess, okay. Notebooks. So that made it actually possible for those kids with lower income and with the difficulties.
What about now? What about now? Like now that like schools are open and like all students are back to classes, has the experience during COVID shifted the classroom environment in schools in Korea right now? I was a teacher way back at the end of 2000s. So I don't know how teaching or the classroom looks like in Korea now.
I have two kids. One is grade 6 and the other one is grade 12. But they just came back to school 2 months ago. But the learning environment in schools has not changed much. But the teachers are using technologies more than before because they had gone already accustomed to the available technologies they have been using during the pandemic period. So the teaching and learning process is not almost the same, but teachers are trying to incorporate new technologies in their teaching process.
I'm actually very glad to hear that. So whenever we deploy a tech in I don't know, in how many countries that are our team supports, there's always that critical piece, which is teacher buy-in. And that's one of our major hurdles. Do you have anything to share with our audiences? How to overcome or incentivize teachers to use more technology and overcome this tech phobia that it seems everybody has in every country?
In Korea, it's from the very beginning, actually, we tried to provide our teachers with some contest. If they win the first prize, second prize, actually, we sent them abroad. That was our first incentives we gave to the teachers. And the second phase was really, we tried to provide them with the promotional points. So the teachers who adapt technologies more than their peers, they were easier to get promoted in school administration system. Then the third stage was we gave them financial support. And they could win some prize monies. That was the third stage. And nowadays, it's like just after pandemic, the Ministry of Education is actually subsidizing some financial support for those teachers who are creating the online communities. So the teachers with same interests, they want to share certain things. They want to actually develop themselves more and they want to become a master teachers in a certain area, certain interests. So the government is providing those things.
As Ms. said, recently, teachers with a similar interest have volunteered to share their necessary abuse and tech and tips for using EdTech. The Ministry of Education in Korea and the education offices also support these activities as well.
That's great. That's great. Great to hear. Chief Sang-won, tell us about the work that you do in CARES.
Before introducing EdTech product in education field, we verify the usability and education effectiveness and provide feedback to the EdTech companies and also provide the product information to EdTech fields. We discover as the best practice for using EdTech product by teachers and provide opportunities for teachers to share their thoughts on EdTech and research and offer teachers new EdTech utilization models. This is meaningful in that the field of education, the schools often lack the information on quality EdTech products that can be effective in lessons, and the companies continuously seek opinions of teachers and students who actually use the product. We aim to connect those demand and supply as a trusted axis. For the global aspect, not only carries, also the Korean Ministry of Education has been contributing to the global society by sharing Korea's experience and expertise. For example, as a PPP, public-private partnership project, Caris placed the Big Blue container classroom with solar panels in African regions with the help from Samsung Electronics. Every year, we train the local teachers with Korea's lead teachers and experts to bring continuous impact and to enhance the partners countries overall capacity in ICT in education. We carry now technical advice on ICT in education project.
Thank you, Chief Sangwon. So I'm hearing two interesting aspects. There are EdTech products developed in the country, and these products are applied to Caris, and then they go to the school level, and teachers work together to improve this product, and then they are deployed at the school level afterwards in the final product. Is that how it works in your team?
What you just said is exactly right. There are products that are developed by the Korean companies, usually very small in size, and they seek opinions from the teachers. And we made this physical space called EdTech Soft Lab, where they can test the product. The teachers and students and the parents can always come to the soft lab and then test the product. And if their usability is appropriate for them to use in the classroom, they usually adapt them to the classroom. They hopefully lead to purchases from the schools or from the offices of education. So what we aim to do is to connect the companies and the field of education, the schools.
That is so interesting. What is the most recent product that was really well received at the school level? Any interesting stories or products that you thought it was innovative and like teachers played a critical role in selecting and deploying at the school level?
Actually, we are trying to test the EdTech services and products right now. And it is not yet that actually we can deploy to the school levels. So we are still trying to find the appropriate EdTech services and products which can be adapted by the teachers and students and parents. So we are several candidates who shows the possibilities, but we are not that stage yet.
That is great, I think. I mean, even at the World Bank EdTech team, like we always promote all these tech devices and applications and develop, be used and piloted in schools before taken to scale. So hearing that in Korea, lots of teachers are involved and the pilots of the tech devices and the applications are tested at the corporate teachers, it's a good chief.
We just focused matching teachers to tech companies because there is no market in public schools. So it's difficult to support to introduce the product in their schools in currently. So we just focused to verify the product to matching education field with the companies.
So that's one stream that you guys are working on your team. And then the second big stream is the global work that you guys are doing, right? And I think you alluded to a little bit about this project, this initiative, Solar School in Africa. So you said you were working with Samsung. How long has it been? How did it go? Are you about to do another one? How has it progressed so far?
When we first started the Solar School project, we made a collaboration agreement with Samsung Corporation in South Africa. But since 2018, they are not actually manufacturing or refurbishing the solar-powered containers. So the providing the solar-powered container has stopped since 2018. But we've already provided the solar-powered containers. So we are, since then, trying to provide the learning contents, and we are trying to train the teachers how to use what we have already provided. We are trying to find some other private partners who can bring appropriate technologies which can be sustainable in African settings and give the educational opportunities to the low-income families. That's what we are trying to do right now.
That's so interesting. But is it going to be like an add-on to the solar school and the container, solar panel container that you talk about, or is it going to be something different with a different company? How do you envision?
Nothing is separate right now, but the one thing we are focusing on is it has to be sustainable by themselves. If the solar power panel destroys, we have to provide them, and we had to fix them, repair them. So it was quite difficult for us, since we are very far. But if it's something that can be fixed, repaired, and then reused by themselves with very low cost, it will be ideal. But actually, we are actually not quite sure what kind of technology can be used. But we are still looking.
So these solar panels, they provide electricity to the computer labs and provide connectivity?
Inside the container, they have about 40 laptops, and they have some servers. So their interconnection is not quite good. So at the beginning, actually, we provided all the educational content in a hard disk. So inside the container, it's like a local area network. So the students can actually look for what they want. Of course, the content was limited, just what is in the hard disk. But since the hard disk price went down so low, so we could actually provide a really big the size of hard disk. So they could almost search the same environment as they are searching internet.
And we are about to start a project in a new way. We intended to provide education using software in schools where Solar School is installed in cooperation with Korean edtech companies. We are creating a new collaboration model, and now this year we plan to conduct field research and we carry out activities next year.
And this is focused on Africa, right? At the World Bank team, like our biggest portfolio has always been Africa. So like, I think we could definitely look for synergies.
When we started actually, because it was a solar powered school, so the solar power could be applied only in African region and a certain part of Southeast Asian region. But actually we just really focused on Africa region because of the Samsung cooperation in South Africa. But now we are not quite sure. Since probably next year, the Korean Africa will have some kind of a big event. So probably we will be focusing on Africa again.
When I visited you last winter, I saw you guys being very, very busy with these new initiative coming along. And now we have this new ChatGPT, right? And that is also powered by AI. Do you think the Ministry of Education or CARES will also be working on, you know, these new technology and how that's going to shape education, how that's going to, you know, affect student learning and teacher training?
Actually, the initiative that we just talked about consists of three main points. And the first point is the AI-driven textbooks. And we are planning to introduce AI textbooks in this subject of math, English, and informatics by the year of 2025. And also regarding the capacity of teachers and students, we are currently coming up with an index to assess the teachers' ability on AI. And after this year, I think starting from next year, every teacher should be evaluated on their AI capacity. I don't know what that's going to be. And every teacher should be evaluated. And there must be ways to enhance their ability. At the same time, we will provide teacher training on the AI skills specifically. So the teachers will redesign their lesson plans according to the new technology, AI technology. And for ChatGPT, I'm not sure our government has any plan for using the generative AI for now. They're focusing on the AI-driven textbooks because I don't think the ChatGPT is now safe or appropriate for our children to use at the point.
In terms of ChatGPT, we are not quite sure what's going on in the educational, in school levels, but in our organization, it's a stone was thrown and the ripple is really, really coming to us. And really every other day, we are having some kind of forums, discussions, and lectures, and somebody's presenting something about the ChatGPT. So it's giving us a lot of effect. We are trying to find out how we can accommodate this kind of really disruptive technologies. So that's a big issue to us also. So we will see. Maybe in this year, I guess, something will happen. And whether we will adapt the ChatGPT in our educational setting, or we will just, but just like in Italy, the government will ban to using the ChatGPT. We will see it soon.
The Korean Ministry of Education recently held a seminar about the ChatGPT using in the classrooms.
That's so exciting. I think that's like the best part about working on EdTech, because you constantly learn and you have to learn at a faster pace than how the society is moving, so that we could always respond and support our clients. For Caris would be the citizens of Korea, and for our team would be our clients for the World Bank. I also remember that there was a very important report. I think it was collaboration between Michael Turcano and Caris on digital education agencies around the world. And I think it was financed by Caris. And also it featured a lot of the basics of Caris, what it is, what it does, how it was established and financed. I know Mr. Min Kim has a long relationship with a lot of the core team members. Do you mind walking us through a little bit on that?
It's been almost 15 years. Michael Turcano was there. We had what we call Global Symposium on ICT in Education. We had that symposium for 10 years, from 2006 to 2016. For one decade, well, we had that symposium, and then we had great help from the World Bank. And also in Korea, in our team, actually, when we have newcomers, we always told them, you have to read the articles that the World Bank Dev team produced, those blogs, and that's our Bible. So we had lots of collaborations and lots of work together, and then we also learned from you a lot. And we had 2011, when somewhere there, we had an MOU with World Bank, and then, it was always good memories. And then from now on, we have to make a better collaboration effort and project and whatever it is.
I think the report written by Mr. Michael Turcano is available on World Bank's archive. So if anyone's interested, please visit and have a look. And according to the report, in Caris' case, the government first considered to create a new bureau inside the Ministry of Education to oversee the rollout of new technologies within the education system, or to build an external public institution outside the ministry, or to do both. And at the end of the day, we have Caris as a semi-independent organization and also a bureau in the ministry who oversees the entire ecosystem.
Thank you so much for your time. And I think this is going to be just the first conversation that we will have for many more to come. We learned so much about what's happening in EdTech in Korea. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.